Chapter 57. Stumbling up the steps, as if suddenly exhausted, Lena entered the room and let herself fall on the nearest chair. Before following her, Hayes took a survey of the surroundings from the veranda. It was a complete solitude. There was nothing in the aspect of this familiar scene to tell him that he and the girl were not completely alone as they had been in the early days of their common life on this abandoned spot, with only Wang discreetly materializing from time to time, and the uncomplaining memory of Morrison to keep them company. After the cold gust of wind there was an absolute stillness of the air. The thunder-charged mass hung unbroken beyond the low, ink black headland, darkening the twilight. By contrast, the sky at the zenith displayed pellucid clearness, the sheen of a delicate glass bubble which the merest movement of air might shatter. A little to the left, between the black masses of the headland and of the forest, the volcano, a feather of smoke by day and a cigar glow at night, took its first fiery expanding breath of the evening. Above it a reddish star came out like an expelled spark from the fiery bosom of the earth, enchanted into permanency by the mysterious spell of frozen spaces. In front of Hayes the forest, already full of the deepest shades, stood like a wall. But he lingered, watching its edge, especially where it ended at the line of bushes, masking the land end of the jetty. Since the girl had spoken of catching a glimpse of something white among the trees, he believed pretty firmly that they had been followed in their excursion up the mountain by Mr. Jones' secretary. No doubt the fellow had watched them out of the forest, and now, unless he took the trouble to go back some distance and fetch a considerable circuit inland over the clearing, he was bound to walk out into the open space before the bungalows. Hayes did, indeed, imagine at one time some movement between the trees, lost as soon as perceived. He stated patiently, but nothing more happened. After all, why should he trouble about these people's actions? Why this stupid concern for the preliminaries, since, when the issue was joined, it would find him disarmed and shrinking from the ugliness and degradation of it? He turned and entered the room. Deep dusk reigned in there already. Lena, near the door, did not move or speak. The sheen of the white tablecloth was very obtrusive. The brute these two vagabonds had tamed had entered on its service while Hayes and Lena were away. The table was laid. Hayes walked up and down the room several times. The girl remained without sound or movement on the chair. But when Hayes, placing the two silver candelabra on the table, struck a match to light the candles, she got up suddenly and went into the bedroom. She came out again almost immediately, having taken off her hat. Hayes looked at her over his shoulder. What's the good of shirking the evil hour? I've lighted these candles for a sign of our return. After all, we might not have been watched while returning, I mean. Of course we were seen leaving the house. The girl sat down again. The great wealth of her hair looked very dark above her colorless face. She raised her eyes, glistening softly in the light with a sort of unreadable appeal, with a strange effect of unseeing innocence. Yes, said Hayes across the table, the fingertips of one hand resting on the immaculate cloth. Creature with an antediluvian lower jaw, hairy like a mastodon, and formed like a prehistoric ape, has laid this table. Are you awake, Lena? Am I? I would pinch myself, only I know that nothing would do away with this dream. Three covers. You know it is the shorter of the two who's coming, the gentleman who, in the play of his shoulders as he walks, and in his facial structure, recalls a jaguar. Ah, you don't know what a jaguar is? But you have had a good look at these two. It's the short one, you know, who's to be our guest. She made a sign with her head that she knew. Hayes' insistence brought Ricardo vividly before her mental vision. A sudden languor, like the physical echo of her struggle with the man, paralyzed all her limbs. She lay still in the chair, feeling very frightened at this phenomenon, ready to pray aloud for strength. Hayes had started to pace the room. Our guest. There is a proverb in Russia, I believe that when a guest enters the house, God enters the house. The sacred virtue of hospitality. But it leads one into trouble as well as any other. The girl unexpectedly got up from the chair, swaying her supple figure and stretching her arms above her head. He stopped to look at her curiously, paused, and then went on. I venture to think that God has nothing to do with such a hospitality, and with such a guest. As he had jumped to her feet, to react against the numbness, to discover whether her body would obey her will. It did. She could stand up, and she could move her arms freely. Though no physiologist, she concluded that all that sudden numbness was in her head, not in her limbs. Her fears assuaged, she thanked God for it mentally, and to X murmured a protest. Oh, yes. He's got to do with everything, every little thing. Nothing can happen, yes, he said hastily, one of the two sparrows can't be struck to the ground, you are thinking of that. The habitual playful smile faded on the kindly lips under the martial mustache. H, you remember what you have been told as a child on Sundays? Yes, I do remember. She sank into the chair again. Tea was the only decent bit of time I ever had, when I was a kid, with our landlady's two girls, you know. I wonder, Lena, Hest said, with a return to his urbane playfulness, whether you are just a little child, or whether you represent something as old as the world. She surprised Hest by saying dreamily, well, and what about you? I date later, much later. I can't call myself a child, but I am so recent that I may call myself a man of the last hour, or is it the hour before last? I have been out of it so long that I am not certain how far the hands of the clock have moved since he glanced at the portrait of his father, exactly above the head of the girl, as if it were ignoring her in its painted austerity of feeling. He did not finish the sentence. But he did not remain silent for long. Only what must be avoided are fallacious inferences, my dear Lena, especially at this hour. Now you are making fun of me again, she said without looking up. Am I? He cried. Making fun? No, giving warning. Hang it all, whatever truth people told you in the old days, there is also this one, that sparrows do fall to the ground, that they are brought to the ground. This is no vain assertion, but a fact. That's why again his tone changed, while he picked up the table knife, and let it fall disdainfully at, why I wish these wretched round knives had some edge on them. Absolute rubbish, neither edge, point, nor substance. I believe one of these forks would make a better weapon at a pinch. But can I go about with a fork in my pocket? He gnashed his teeth with a rage very real, and yet comic. There used to be a carver here, but it was broken and thrown away a long time ago. Nothing much to carve here. It would have made a noble weapon, no doubt, but he stopped. The girl sat very quiet, with downcast eyes. As he kept silence for some time, she looked up and said thoughtfully, yes, a knife, it's a knife that you would want, wouldn't you, in case, he shrugged his shoulders. There must be a crowbar or two in the sheds, but I have given up all the keys together. And then, do you see me walking about with a crowbar in my hand? Ha, ha. And besides, that edifying sight alone might start the trouble for all I know. In truth, why has it not started yet? Perhaps they are afraid of you, she whispered, looking down again. By Jove, it looks like it, he assented meditatively. They do seem to hang back for some reason. Is that reason prudence, or downright fear, or perhaps the leisurely method of certitude? Out in the black night, not very far from the bungalow, resounded a loud and prolonged whistle. Lena's hands grasped the sides of the chair, but she made no movement. Hest started, and turned his face away from the door. The startling sound had died away. Whistles, yells, omens, signals, portents, what do they matter, he said. But what about the crowbar? Suppose I had it. could I stand in ambush at the side of the door, this door, and smash the first protruding head, scatter blood and brains over the floor, over these walls, and then run stealthily to the other door, to do the same thing and repeat the performance for a third time, perhaps? Could I? On suspicion, without compunction, with a calm and determined purpose? No, it is not in me. I date too late. Would you like to see me attempt this thing, while that mysterious prestige of mine lasts, or their not less mysterious hesitation? No, no, she whispered ardently, as if compelled to speak by his eyes fixed on her face. Oh, it's a knife you want to defend yourself with, to defend there will be time, and who knows, if it isn't really my duty, he began again, as if he had not heard her disjointed words at all. T may be my duty to you, to myself. For why should I put up with the humiliation of their secret menaces? Do you know what the world would say? He emitted a low laugh, which struck her with terror. She would have got up, but he stooped so low over her, that she could not move without first pushing him away. It would say, Lena, that I the Swede, after luring my friend and partner to his death from mere greed of money, have murdered these unoffending shipwrecked strangers from sheer funk. That would be the story whispered, perhaps shouted, certainly spread out, and believed, my dear Lena. Who would believe such awful things? Perhaps you wouldn't, not at first, at any rate, but the power of calumny grows with time. It's insidious and penetrating. It can even destroy one's faith in oneself, dry rot the soul. All at once her eyes leaped to the door and remained fixed, stony, a little enlarged. Turning his head, Hest beheld the figure of Ricardo framed in the doorway. For a moment none of the three moved, then, looking from the newcomer to the girl in the chair, Hest formulated a sardonic introduction. Mr. Ricardo, my dear. Her head drooped a little. Ricardo's hand went up to his mustache. His voice exploded in the room. At your service, ma'am. He stepped in, taking his hat off with a flourish, and dropping it carelessly on a chair near the door. At your service, he repeated, in quite another tone. Was made aware there was a lady about, by that Pedro of ours. Only I didn't know I should have the privilege of seeing you tonight, ma'am. Lena and Hest looked at him covertly, but he, with a vague gaze avoiding them both, looked at nothing, seeming to pursue some point in space. Had a pleasant walk, he asked suddenly. Yes. And you? Returned Hest, who had managed to catch his glance. I haven't been a yard away from the governor this afternoon till I started for here. The genuineness of the accent surprised Hest, without convincing him of the truth of the words. Why do you ask? Pursued Ricardo with every inflection of perfect candor. You might have wished to explore the island a little, said Hest, studying the man, who, to render him justice, did not try to free his captured gaze. May remind you that it wouldn't be a perfectly safe proceeding. Ricardo presented a picture of innocence. Oh, yes, meaning that chink that has ran away from you. He ain't much. He has a revolver, observed Hest meaningly. Well, and you have a revolver too, Mr. Ricardo argued unexpectedly. Don't worry myself about that. That's different. I am not afraid of you, Hest made answer after a short pause. Of me? Of all of you. You have a queer way of putting things, began Ricardo. At that moment the door on the compound side of the house came open with some noise, and Pedro entered, pressing the edge of a loaded tray to his breast. His big hairy head rolled a little, his feet fell in front of each other with a short, hard thump on the floor. The arrival changed the current of Ricardo's thought, perhaps, but certainly of his speech. You heard me whistling a little while ago outside? That was to give him a hint, as I came along, that it was time to bring in the dinner, and here it is. Lena rose and passed to the right of Ricardo, who lowered his glance for a moment. They sat down at the table. The enormous gorilla back of Pedro swayed out through the door. Extraordinary strong brute, ma'am, said Ricardo. He had a propensity to talk about his Pedro, as some men will talk of their dog. He ain't pretty, though. No, he ain't pretty. And he has got to be kept under. I am his keeper, as it might be. The governor don't trouble his head much about details. All that's left to Martin. Martin, that's me, ma'am. Hest saw the girl's eyes turn towards Mr. Jones' secretary and rest blankly on his face. Ricardo, however, looked vaguely into space, and, with faint flickers of a smile about his lips, made conversation indefatigably against the silence of his entertainers. He boasted largely of his long association with Mr. Jones over 4 years now, he said. Then, glancing rapidly at text, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.